So, without further ado, gang, let's start off the top of the show. It's January 17th, 2020, by welcoming our first guest, Yaur Charlie.
Hi, John.
Welcome, Yaur.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, good to have you on the show. Listening Impossible. What is it?
Yes. So, Listening Impossible is a show on CNBC, and it is based on the work of our team, which is the Aaron Kerman Group. And we are the top sales team in California, number 10 in the country. And we're known for going in and selling homes that are challenging. And the premise of the show is that we go into homes that have either been sitting on the market, haven't sold, or have some sort of issue behind them, potentially an issue with the seller. And we come in, repackage, remarket, retool, and then relaunch the home in hopes that it sells.
Yeah. Now, okay, I watched the first show because it was on this weekend. You were coming. I thought, okay, I better get up to date on what this is all about. It was more than that. It was about, you know, some of these sellers being just stubborn, opinionated, bullheaded, feeling like they didn't have enough, weren't enough, couldn't do it. It was more, to me, about the psyche of what goes on and how your task is to get some of these people into the space called reality.
Well, it's true. I mean, what's nice about this show is that it really gives the viewer a bird's eye view of exactly what happens when you are selling a home, and it's not, you know, it's not made up, it's not trumped up. It's very, what you see is what you get, and oftentimes it is the seller's journey because they start off at a certain place. There's a reason that these homes haven't sold, and then we're able to take them kind of on this ride and hopefully end with the house being sold. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But either way, you see everybody's journey and process.
Yeah. Speaking of journeys, good segue, because I've known you for a very long time.
A long time,
since you were the manager, I think, at Abbey, weren't you?
At Felt. Do you remember Felt?
Oh, my God, yes. David Cooley's Felt on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Yeah, it was actually Tyler Roebuck who... That was Eye Candy.
Eye Candy.
Clearly, yeah. I've shaken way too many cocktails in West Hollywood in a past life. I went from Felt to... I was one of the managers at Here Lounge for 3 years.
Here Lounge, Pat Rogers Here Lounge.
Yeah. And then... Tyler and I opened up Eye Candy,
right,
and did Logo's first TV show.
Yeah, that was a reality show about opening a gay bar in West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what's unique about you, Yaur? Okay, so my producer over here, the darling Jason, love of my life, I see him every Friday.
Yes, we have a good time
week
every week.
Is Muslim. He's a Muslim from a Lebanese family. So it's rare to be Muslim, but to be gay and Muslim is even rarer.
It is. It adds a complication. And, you know, my journey, if you will, is a very unique one in that I grew up in San Francisco in a very conservative Muslim family.
Pakistani.
And, you know, everyone prays 5 times a day. And what was great about it, though, is when you grow up in San Francisco, you get a very interesting perspective. It's very a community feeling. I mean, my family would go to gay pride parades when I was, you know, 10 years old, but it was because it was a community celebration. And so in that respect, they were very open and welcoming. And, you know, for me, it was just sort of a progression kind of. That's just sort of how it worked. I was never anything other than my kind of authentic self. And then, you know, but when you're in the Muslim culture, and I'm sure your producer will be able to give a little advice on this.
I learned all about fasting and Ramadan.
Well, even more than that, I was going to say, kind of just sort of on a surface level, you know, if you are a boy of a certain age, you get, you know, everywhere you go, you get introduced to your potential new wife.
Oh, because you're to have procreate.
Right, exactly.
Jason, you going up against that? You're young and attractive.
Not yet, but there's going to be a certain point where they're going to want to line up a bunch of women for me. We'll see how that goes.
I would say, like, it's so funny. Like, at every religious event or holiday function or family function.
Or marriage.
Or anything. You know, it's like you get, like, I'm like a pretty pony that they just sort of take around and kind of get bids on. And then eventually, you know, obviously I got married in a very public way it was the Grammy Awards.
Oh, the Grammys. That's right.
Yeah. During Macklemore and Ryan Lewis's number. And then Queen Latifah came out. She was ordained for the day. And then Madonna came out and sang Open Your Heart. And so when we did that, I remember, because I wore traditional Pakistani clothing and it had such a huge effect kind of globally.
What is that garment called again?
It was called the kurta.
Kurta. Okay.
And the first call I got from my family was like, well, everybody knows now. And then
we're so disappointed.
It was never a secret, but it's just, you know, again, Muslim cultures, you don't talk about these things. That's why when people watch the news and they're like, oh, homosexuality doesn't exist in our country, it's just because they don't talk about it. It's not a topic that comes up. Right. And so when that happened with the Grammy Awards and we did it in such a public way, the outpour we got, I got more emails from Middle Eastern countries about how exciting it was for them to watch because it's not something that they could even legally contemplate.
That is amazing.
And homosexuality is illegal in some of those places. Yeah. And so it gave him hope, which was really nice.
When we come back, we'll be talking more to Yara Charlie about those experiences growing up gay and Muslim here and around the world. And well, thank you for tuning in here on Channel Q. Home by Michael Bublé, and we're talking about homes and housing because we've got Yara Charlie in the studio today talking about his new reality show, Listing Impossible, but also about the fact that he's a gay Muslim. And, you know, I think for a lot of, because I've had other gay Muslims come in and out of the studio, and it's very, it's a common experience yet uniquely culturally different between maybe Pakistanis and people from Israel and people from Iraq, Iran. For you, I imagine when you are walking into a bar, people look at you. If they don't know, if they're not familiar with the diversity that is around Los Angeles, they probably start speaking to you in Spanish.
I was going to say, ¿cómo estás?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
you
no,
look like my people.
Right, exactly. No, when I used to be an actor, the first commercial I ever did was in Spanish.
Are you serious?
Yeah, all the time. If I don't have a beard and I'm walking around, people think I'm like Mediterranean.
Yeah.
I get Greek a lot.
Right.
Depending on how dark the beard is, that's when it gets a little further Middle Eastern.
Yeah. I imagine the thicker your beard, the more likely the TSA is going to stop you at the airport.
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started.
I know. It happens to me, too. Like, the thicker I grow my facial hair, I get stopped.
And ironically, the only place I don't get stopped is going to Mexico or leaving Mexico. I swear to God, it's hilarious, you know, because my husband is white. And so he'll get stopped leaving Mexico. I won't. I'm like, now you know how it feels.
Reverse discrimination.
Welcome to my world.
So when you were a little gay kid and you're being brought up in Muslim culture, and there's all this cultural pressure about you're going to marry, you're going to have children, this is how you are successful as a Paki. I mean, what's happening in your head?
You know what? My situation is very interesting because there was no trauma. There was no, you know, major aha moment. There was nothing. I mean, I was dating girls all the way through college, and my kind of sexual evolution sort of happened there. But it was very like, okay, this is what's happening now.
Wow.
And it was not...
only in San Francisco is that...
A lot of people say that, but you know what? I didn't meet my first openly gay person until I got to college, at least that I was aware of.
Huh.
But the nice thing where I grew up, and I went to... this is even better, and everyone always asks for some hot stories, which I have none, by the way, so spoiler alert. I went to an all-boys Jesuit prep school. And then I went to a Jesuit college. So, like, everyone's like, ooh, tell us about high school. And I'm like, nothing. I mean, seriously, it was the most innocent childhood possible, which was really great. But my point is that when kind of sexuality came into the picture, it was like, okay, this is what's happening now, and this is how I feel, and I just sort of went with it. So it wasn't a major, oh, my God, what's happening with my life? Because I didn't know which direction it was really going to go. And then, you know, I met my a long-term boyfriend that I had, and then I married a man, and so I'm like, this is where my life is.
Right.
And that was that.
So, I mean, a lot of the major cities where LGBT people have often called home, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Miami, Chicago, are becoming unaffordable. I mean, there's a real affordability crisis.
There is.
In a lot of LGBT meccas. So I think a lot of LGBT people still want to live in these places,
correct,
yet struggle to find that first starter home, thinking, if I have to buy my first home, it's going to be out in the burbs somewhere.
And, you know, this is what I always tell people, and especially LGBTQ folks, is that a home is the best investment you're ever going to make. It's the most solid investment. It's the most secure investment. And it's the only investment that really sort of you can count on paying you back, meaning that if you're paying $3,000 a month in rent, you're basically burning it. If you took that $3,000 and were able to apply it to a mortgage, you'd have a tax deduction, so you'd have that savings. You're paying towards principal, so really it's almost like a forced savings account, if you think of it that way. So that way when you go to sell it, you know that you have a certain amount of equity, you've had a tax deduction, so you have savings there, and you're putting your money to work. So it's really just wrapping your head around the process and making it that it's not so so much of a terrorizing thing or something so overwhelming, which is why I always tell folks, work with someone who has experience, work with someone who has a good track record, who can handhold you through this. Because when you're a first-time home buyer, sometimes you need that. And you want to go to someone who has the resources to help you. And specifically for LGBTQ people, it's really good to work with someone who understands that when you sit down with a same-sex couple, their tax returns might look different. And you know, you have to work with a financial mortgage broker who understands those differences. Sometimes in certain areas, there's discrimination, you know, and John, you know this. I mean, when you apply for an apartment, sometimes there's a reason that there's a Fair Housing Act because people were discriminated against. Mm-hmm. So it's really just education and understanding like how they can do it and not being afraid of it. Now, because a lot of gay centers, like you said, tend to be on the pricier side, that you have to just, I don't want to say get over it, but you just kind of have to accept the fact that if you want to live in a city, and those cities that you mentioned, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, it does come at a premium. Does there need to be more affordable housing? Absolutely. But if you wait to that moment to happen, then you're really, like I said, every month just burning money. Get into something, because there's a lot of loans that are available right now. Our interest rates are almost at a historic low again. And there's a lot of programs that people can get into that they don't even know about. And and all you have to do is take the first step.
When you were a youngin in San Francisco, a youngin transitioning from straight dating girls to gay boys, would you always live by yourself, or did you live in a communal group of young people?
Well, no, it was sort of a communal group. Probably the other reason that it was so seamless for me is because I have a degree in theater. And so the theater group and family kind of became sort of like a chosen family, if you will. But I always had roommates. And then when I went to grad school, again, had housemates. But once I moved to LA, you know, I moved down here with my best friend. And when he left to go back to San Francisco, I've lived on my own ever since.
Oh.
So the only way you're living with me is if you're married to me now. Sorry, that's it.
That's so funny. When I first moved out, I moved in with two women. This is kind of like when Three's Company just hit the airwaves. I was doing it in real life. And they, of course, figured out I was gay before I did. So I'm trying to date girls.
No.
And yes. And, no. And they're like, honey, this is not going to work. I'm like, what do you mean? But she's so pretty. Yeah, but she's a she.
Yes.
And they were very gentle and pushing me in the right direction. Yeah. Back in my Disneyland days when I was working in the 70s. That was a long time ago.
Please post those photos.
Yeah, thank God there were no iPhones back in the 70s. Where were you in the 70s, Jason? Yeah.
Not here.
Exactly.
Same.
This show, okay, I already have a crush on one of the guys in the show. I sent you a text.
Yes.
What's his name? Jason?
No. Lewis.
I have a crush on Lewis. You don't have to tell me his sexuality. It doesn't matter. He's beautiful. I think that's really the interesting part of the show. You got beautiful people, beautiful actors or realtors, and these beautiful homes and beautiful places.
Right.
It's kind of I'm watching the selling prices, $14 million, $10 million. I'm thinking, most people can't afford this. But I imagine it's just more zeros is what it is. The trauma that people are going through
is
the same, whether
it
it's $100,000 or $100 million.
Yeah, I always say that it's as much work and effort to sell a $400,000 condo as it is a $4 million house, because it means something to the person who owns it. You know, at the end of the day, this is an investment they made. It's the biggest investment most people ever make in their life. And it's an emotional experience. So you have to honor all of those things and know when you go into it that no matter the price point, you have to treat everybody the same way, with the same respect, with the same courtesy, and and knowing that this is a major moment for them.
I want to go back to your culture for just a second.
Sure.
So you're in Los Angeles, you know, huge megapolis. I imagine you run into people formerly from Pakistan or from neighboring India, and that are also LGBT. Is there any sort of affinity that happens when you meet expats?
Would you be surprised if I said that's not the case? It's really sort of funny. I don't. I have one really good friend. His name is Khalid. He might be listening. But he is from India. He's also Muslim. But that's really it. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they're here. I haven't met any.
I've met more Pakistanis, Indians than you have.
You know what? I don't doubt it. It's kind of like one of those, you know, my friend group kind of all look the same. I'm always the token ethnic person.
Dark skin, dark haired
person.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that worked out that way. It just sort of did.
Yeah. Chris Bowen, who we had on the show a few weeks ago, a gay guy from India.
Uh-huh.
Very dark. He gets talked to in Spanish all the time, too.
Oh, my God, all the time. Yes.
All right. We got to wrap it up. If people want to learn more about Listing Impossible, is there a website?
So you can go to cnbc.com/listingimpossible. And you can also find a lot of clips from the show and information about the cast on that site. You can also find me on Instagram at Yawar Charlie, which is YAWARCHARLIE, or just Google me, because there's so much good stuff.
Oh, okay, there you go. Okay, Yowie, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, and please watch the show Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. on CNBC.
Wednesday nights, thank you very much. Gang, when we come back, we'll be talking to council member Michael Gungada from Miami Beach about what terrible things are happening in Florida here on Channel Q.